The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about World Championship Motorcycle Road Racing. I am Bob Hayes, your host, and today is Friday, February 17th, and this is show number 43. We got a good show today. We're going to be starting off with a phone call with Liam Schubert in Spain, our man in Spain, just to touch base with him and kind of see what's new, what's going on. After that, there's a report on the MotoGP test sessions that just took place in Sepang. Some fairly intriguing results going on. A few observations about all that. See what's new on the testing front. Then we're going to wrap the show up today with another cool interview. This one with racer Kenny Noyes. Kenny rides in the Spanish National Championships in their Formula Extreme class, which is pretty close to AMA and World Superstock. It was a lot of fun to talk with him. I managed to do that actually a couple of weeks ago, and I'm just now running the interview, but it was really good, and I think you're going to like it. Before we get to that, I do want to give a big thank you to Wayne Steinert from Rabid Rat Labs for his generous donation to the cause of MotoGPOD. That's really cool. Thank you very much for that, Wayne. I appreciate it. It kind of keeps the Skype bill paid up and stuff so we can do these cool interviews. So thanks. And then another thing I have to mention before I go any further into the show and, you know, maybe kind of end up spacing it or something like I did last week is the Motorcycle Podcast Group Round Wheel Podcasts. As you know, or as you may know, because I've mentioned it before on the show, several of us that are, you know, doing motorcycle podcasts, we've all gotten together and we formed a group called, oddly enough, the Motorcycle Podcast Group. One of the things that we're doing is a joint podcast every now and then. It's mostly about general motorcycling topics that affect street riders, you know, more than specific to MotoGP or anything like that. But we'll talk about whatever we want, really. It's just kind of whatever comes up. It's kind of neat. We have a good time, you know, just sitting there BSing together on a Skype conference call. Hopefully the shows are going to be interesting as well. Our very first episode, which is actually episode number zero because we weren't too sure about it, it's up on the MotorcyclePodcastGroup.com website. And the show, of course, is listed in iTunes as well and a lot of the directories and stuff. So, you know, take a listen, MotorcyclePodcastGroup.com. See if you like it. Send us, you know, nasty grams or suggestions or comments or whatever, all that kind of good stuff. It's kind of neat. And speaking of the Motorcycle Podcast Group, one of the other shows in the group, MotoCast, is having a very, very cool contest. They're getting free stuff for the listeners and that kind of thing. All you have to do is listen to their very interesting interview with Wayne Wilder from Komodo Gear and then answer three easy questions in an email to him. Listen to the show. It's episode number 7 on the MotoCast website. And you can find MotoCast in iTunes or on their website at MotoCastOnline.com. Then after you listen to the show, you go to MotoCastOnline.com, read the three questions, and then send your answers in an email. They'll do a drawing on March 2nd, and the first one with the correct answers wins their choice of a pair of Komodo boots or a back protector, and the second name drawn gets whatever item is left. So everyone likes free stuff. Check it out. It's good stuff, and it was a very interesting interview with Wayne, so you're going to learn something no matter what, and you might win a very cool prize. Also, thanks very much for all the great feedback about the last few shows. I've had a ton of comments about the interview with Max McAllister. That one really, really turned out to be a very popular interview. It was a good show, and it's good. It gives me an idea of what people like and what they're sort of looking for in the show. And I got a lot of email, of course, about the phone call with Chuck Axlin from Team Roberts that we had last week, which, you know, obviously a show about MotoGP should have some interviews with people that actually work in MotoGP, but they've been a little few and far between here on MotoGPOD. But it's not really surprising that everyone would like that interview. It is still cool to hear that people enjoyed it. So, you know, if you didn't have a chance to catch those two segments, check out the last two shows, number 41 and number 42 from February 3rd and February 10th. They're really good shows. And if you'd like to send any comments, suggestions, whatever, the email address is always MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. Next, well, it's been a while since we had any gossip or discussion about Max Biaggi. As you've already heard on MotoGPOD, the Roman Emperor, the bearded warrior, Max Biaggi, is definitely not racing in MotoGP, so I'm not breaking any news there. He's also not racing in World Superbike. He has done some testing with the Midland F1 Formula One team, and it looks likely that he's going to be doing some more. But there's another rumor that's flying around the Italian news sites that I actually wanted to mention today. And I asked longtime listener from Italy, Francesco Ardia, to translate the article, and he kindly provided me with this. Biaggi can't seem to secure a future within racing, except perhaps for a late debut in World Superbike during next season. However, even this possibility seems to have been dismissed by the rider himself. But he might stay within the motorcycle racing circles in a new and as yet unseen role, that of a TV commentator. His chosen uniform would be that of the National TV RAI, given that Mediaset has the MotoGP rights until 2011 with an already complete team of announcers. Biaggi could therefore become the main motor racing color commentator for RAI, perhaps with his current girlfriend, former Miss Italy Eleonora Petrone, who is already involved in the TV business. It's certain that Max, fresh from the highly competitive world of motorcycle racing, could provide very interesting comments, although perhaps not too objective when speaking of Honda. And that's the end of the story there from MotoOnline.it. And thank you very much, Francesco, for your translation. It helped a lot. The Google translation kind of leaves a lot to be desired on these kind of things. But continuing on the same thread, Max posted this on his website at max-biaggi.com. He says, Sunday, the 19th of February, Max will be the guest on a sport TV program called Controcampo that will start at 10:30 p.m. on Channel Italia Uno. The champion will answer the questions of the brilliant presenter Sandro Piccini. Don't miss it. Well, obviously don't miss it if you're in Italy. But if you do get a chance to see the show and you happen to speak Italian, let me know what Max does and how he performs there on that show. I'm going to be missing Max a lot in MotoGP because every sport needs a bad boy, and Max really fit that bill for us real well. But it's time to move on. No more Max. Alrighty then. Enough perambulations. Let's get on with the rest of the show. Alrighty, I've got Liam from Spain on the phone again today. So welcome to MotoGPOD, Liam. How are you doing?
Great. Good to be back. I love listening to MotoGPOD. It's a fascinating show, and I'm glad that I've helped some listeners enjoy it more and turned on new people to it.
Alrighty, thanks. So, how's it been going? What's been going on in your side of the world lately?
Well, I guess the first off big news for me is that on Sunday I'm headed back to Qatar for round three of the Losail National Cup, which is the Qatari National Series. And I'm going a bit early because I need to clear out the main hangar, all the pit garages, with our bikes and all our tools and equipment, and remove that because World Superbike is coming to play this upcoming weekend on the 23rd through the 25th of February. So they're going to be taking our spots. We're going to be moving down the paddock towards I'm not sure if it's going to be a tent or portable buildings, but we're definitely going to be displaced by the big boys.
Huh. So you might get to do some mechanicking in a tent, huh?
Yeah, well, I mean, it is the desert, so a tent seems appropriate. I'm just glad that I get to be there to experience the Superbike race because I'm really excited to see how the 06 Pirelli control tires work. I've been following the testing, and I can see that the 06 tire is head and tails above the 05, and I think we're going to start seeing the times between Superbike and MotoGP getting closer this year as a result of Pirelli's hard work. I also like Pirelli tires for the streets, so I'm a little biased. But anytime you can get a production bike to work within 3 to 4 seconds of a MotoGP bike on a two-minute track, I think that's phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I agree, big time. So you work for the same racer every time at these Qatari National Series. So how's your racer doing? You've done two of these races. What's going on?
Yes, I work for a guy named Ali D. Mohammed, and he works for a chemical company in Qatar. I guess his family owns it, but most of the racers that are running with us are tend to be on the wealthier side, so they can afford to have leader bikes and practice on their own, and then they come and they use our 600s to compete on. And my guy came in fourth last week, the last time we were there, which was great because, one, he kept it on two wheels, which meant less work for me, and two, he moves up in his standings. So I'm pretty excited about that, and I'm hoping that he does even better this time around and gets on the podium. I'm excited for him. And I think also, while I'm out there, I'll be helping with Talal, who is the winner of last year's Losai Cup. He competes in some of the Spanish national championship rounds, and he's got a wild card entry into the World Superbike race running an R1. So, yeah, Dantin is going to be preparing and taking care of that bike, and I think I'm going to get a chance to help out with that. So within the space of a few short weeks, it seems I go from working on an R6, which is fairly stock, some suspension modifications, exhaust, you know, small things, to working on a World Superbike level creature, which should be a blast for me. I love to be around the machinery.
Oh, yeah, that's really cool. And you're also sort of, you know, expanding the different kinds of bikes that you've worked on, two strokes, four strokes, big bikes, little bikes, you know, so that's really good stuff.
Well, I think you get to a point where all the machines are just become machines. And when I say just become machines, I don't mean that they're not as special. Each one is individual and unique. But you look at a guy that works on lots of different types of cars. He might not be, you know, familiar with a Ford as much as he is with a Chevy, but generally he can figure it out, and it's all fairly straightforward. Same pieces make this work, and it's like a puzzle or a map. The components need to be there, and they need to be a certain way in order for things to work at their best. So I think I've described it before that working on things in a mechanical sense is like a language. Once you kind of get the basics of the language down, it's pretty easy to adapt. I just wish my own language ability was that good when it came to speaking Spanish.
So the Spanish lessons aren't coming along all that well, I take it.
Well, they're coming along, but I get really confused because I speak some Japanese, and as much as they might sound different in my brain, I guess translating things in my head, I swap back and forth, and it gets a little confusing. So I think I just need more practice. And fortunately, going out to Qatar means I'm isolated with all my Spanish teammates. And since they're all a little bit younger, I'm learning a lot more slang and street talk, as it were.
Right, right. And I'm sure that, you know, although many of them might speak English, they probably speak Spanish when they're kind of amongst themselves. So you're forced to speak Spanish with them.
Actually, they don't really speak English. There's three or four that speak English, and then another 15 that don't. And that they're the people I have the most fun with, because you can just look at one another or see a situation, and one word can describe everything. It just becomes that much more powerful when you have the right word. Bam! Everybody starts laughing, and it keeps it good. Especially when the schedule can go well into the night, and you don't really know when things are going to be finished or ready, and it's good to have a sense of humor like that, where everybody can relax a bit and not fully stay in the crunch.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. Well, you know, anytime you have a good work environment, it's always better. So when you're at these Qatari national races during that World Superbike weekend, what are you going to be doing while the World Superbike races are going to be going on? Do you think you're going to be busy with your job, or are you going to be able to, you know, kind of walk around, or what?
Well, I actually think I'm going to get some time to mosey around and check things out. Normally, the way the Qatar series runs, we set up things on Thursday, and we have a practice on Friday, and then we have qualifying and racing on Saturday. But because World Superbike is going to be there, we're acting as the support race for that. And Thursday is going to be a practice, and then do some work to the bike. Friday will be the qualifying, do a little bit more work to the bike, and then Saturday will be the race. So it takes some of the pressure off of us because it spreads out the actual riding activities over 3 days. So I think we're going to get a little bit more free time to smell the race fuel and soak it all in. And I think it's going to be a really good experience because, one, not too many people go to the Qatar races. It's so in the middle of nowhere. It's not Asia. It's not Europe. It's a small enough place where everybody's going to be jammed in together. There's going to be no avoiding anybody. I love it when it's like a private race. I think it's kind of amazing that such a small country gets Superbike and MotoGP, and the entire United States gets one or the other, despite, you know, we have so many tracks. And I'm hoping the track in Utah gets the FIM certification. We just need to have more racing in the U.S., or Americans need to learn to go overseas.
Well, yeah, even at Laguna Seca, we don't get the 125s and the 250s, which is, you know, kind of a bummer.
Yeah, definitely. The 250s are running about 100, 105 horsepower, less than 300 pounds. I mean, fantastic, fantastic bikes. Another, I guess, other news in the GP world is WCM has announced that they had an American riding for them, Jason Perez out of California, and really strong rider. This looks to be a big break for his career. And then immediately afterwards, I read online that WCM is pulling out of MotoGP.
Right, yeah. The Italian website GP1 broke that story a few days ago. Now, have you heard anything official? I mean, is that for sure that WCM is not going to participate next season, or it's still in the rumor stage, right?
You know, everything's been quiet from everybody that I've spoken to. I shot an email off to WCM, but I haven't heard anything back. So I have no idea whether or not they're going to come up with a pinch hitter that's going to back the team or not. Really hope they do get somebody.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, because you had Jason Perez and Jeremy McWilliams that were announced as being on the FIM official entry list, although both writers said, well, you know, the contract hasn't actually been signed yet. And I think it'd be a great opportunity for Jason Perez to ride for WCM. I mean, it's you know, typical sort of stepping stone. I mean, I think it worked out pretty well for Jason, for James Ellison. He seems to be, you know, maybe having some learning issues.
Well, I don't know if they're learning issues. It's definitely quite a different beast to go from the WCM to the M1. And as the tires play a much more critical role at that level of the game than just about anything. If you don't have absolute trust or if something's happening that you don't know how to counter, you're really left out in the cold. So it might be a communications issue also, because Irv Poncherel's team is French, and he might not be able to say exactly or express himself completely so that they know, okay, this is a direction we need to go.
So you think there might be some sort of language barrier, kind of communication gap thing that occasionally goes on then sometimes?
Yeah, I do. The more I observe, the more I see that there's generally one or two people that can communicate well with the rider. But other times when there are obvious language difficulties, my friend Hiro Aoyama, formerly of the Honda 250 squad, now he's on the KTM Factory 250 team. His management uses a numbering system when it comes to evaluating bike performance in terms of power, brakes, tires. Every time he comes back into the garage off the track, they say brakes 1 to 10, and he chooses a number between 1 and 10 to evaluate their performance, and then they adjust accordingly. So that seems like a rudimentary system, because you hope that everybody knows what 6 is or what 7 is on the scale of things. But when people can't effectively communicate, that's what they have to work with. And I think more of that goes on than we realize.
Yeah, that's probably true. And although English is sort of the international language, you know, has become so, and it's the official language of MotoGP and all that, you know, people speak it with different degrees of proficiency or, you know, perhaps not at all. So you get a Japanese rider and working for an Austrian team, you know, the chances are that both these people are working in second languages. That must make things really difficult.
Yeah, language is definitely the default, but I would say that not very many people are fluent. There are those that are, but they're generally in marketing and PR, representing the team on various levels. But the guys that actually get the work done, it's basic, you know, basic comprehension, minimal conversation. I mean, they're there to work. They're not there to make friends in English.
Yeah, I'll bet. You got any other news or anything that you want to talk about? Anything special going on?
No, actually, I'm just waiting for Sunday. I'm excited to go. More hotel food. I think as I see more traveling with the with my own team, and it's only once or twice a month for me. It's definitely become more clear to me that in order to be a champion at this level, you need to be able to sleep wherever, whenever, and you have to deal with a lot more than I had originally expected, because the travel is incredibly hard on everybody. You know, as an example, when I go to Qatar, I take off at 3:30 in the afternoon on a Wednesday, and I fly to London. That's my crossover flight. I have a 2 or 3 hour wait before my next flight, just in case my first plane was late. Then I fly to Qatar, and by the time I arrive, it's 6:30 a.m., and you have to go to work. Now, some of the larger teams can schedule better than that, granted, but I would think that with all the testing and all the races that go on, by the time the second half of the season rolls around, you're exhausted. And to be able to concentrate mentally and focus during a race, practices, qualifying, sometimes 3 weeks in a row every weekend, that's phenomenal. And I think we don't give these guys enough credit for being able to travel as much as they do.
Yeah, well, a lot of people seem to think that traveling for work is just fun and games, which it really isn't. Well, in any case, it's probably about out of time, so really appreciate having you on the show, Liam. We're going to have to do it again real soon. Lots of luck there at your race with Ali D. Mohammed, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'll get in touch with you when I get back after the Superbike race.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good.
Okay, thanks, Bob, and thanks, everybody, for listening to MotoGPOD.
All the MotoGP teams except WCM traveled to Sepang this past week for the last of the winter tests before the true official preseason test at Catalunya and Jerez. On day one, Marco Melandri crashed in the morning, but still managed to put in the fast time of the day on his second bike with a lap time of 2 minutes, 1.66 seconds, which is a very great lap time. And it's right up there with the best times from the second Sepang test, you know, on his first day, so on the backup bike, no less. So that's pretty good. Second fastest lap time was Danny Pedrosa. First time out on the 2006 RC211B with a spiffy new livery. About 0.2 behind Melandri. Third fastest, Colin Edwards with a 202 flat. Followed closely by John Hopkins on his miraculous Suzuki. And in a very unaccustomed fifth place, we had Valentino Rossi with a 202.2 lap time. Rossi's been having big problems with chatter lately, and the team is working hard on fixing that, but it is affecting his lap times a little bit. There's a bang. Edwards had problems with this chatter problem all year last year, but Rossi seemed to be okay until this year's model. Interestingly, Crash.net reports that Yamaha tried a 16-inch rear tire instead of the normal 16.5 to try and help fix the problems. Rossi says that the 2006 M1 is a big improvement over the 2005 model, and his lap times and testing at Sepang seem to back that up. In the 2005 Malaysian Grand Prix, for instance, Rossi qualified with a 202.412, and he shaved almost a second off that time in that second Sepang test. Now, I'm sure that, you know, weather conditions and all that played a huge factor, but it's still very significant. Incidentally, February 16th was Rossi's 27th birthday. He said he's getting old, if you can believe it. Now, I know that most of you listening to the show are older than that, so, you know, how does that make you feel? Also, talking about Rossi, he rode bikes with both tobacco and non-tobacco livery there at Sepang, probably so that they could get some, you know, tobacco-safe photos for all of the countries of the world, including the United States, that seem happy enough to tax cigarettes and make revenue off of it, but would rather not see the brand names. But that's not my point. Point is that instead of saying Rossi on the bike where the Camel logo normally would go, which is pretty much what Camel have done for many years with their rider's name on there instead of Camel, the bike says Team. Now, they've always done that with the shirts that the team members wear, the mechanics and whatnot, but I'm wondering why they started to do it with the bikes and leathers. Now, is this something that it's because Rossi's kind of sending the message that it's a team effort and it's not all just about Rossi, or, you know, is it because Edwards is too long and doesn't fit and they want uniformity or what? You know, is there some other reason? So I just don't know. But I thought it was vaguely interesting, and if anyone out there does know, send me an email about it, motogpod@motogpod.com. I'd like to hear from you. Okay, back to the day one times. Sixth fastest was Loris Caparossi with a 202.64, followed by Randy Depunier on the Kawasaki, managing to beat his teammate Shinya Nakano's best time of the day for the first time that I can remember, at least. Good for Randy. And while we're talking birthdays, Randy Depunier is 25 as of last Tuesday, so he's another birthday boy. Then Colin Edwards is on the 27th of February, so a lot of birthdays here in February. Eighth fastest on day one, also having a frustrating day, was Nicky Hayden with a 202.86. And then a long ways back at 203.4, we had Carlos Checa, who is still doing pretty well on those Dunlops. Checa was followed by Casey Stoner in 10th. Now, Stoner had to end his day early because an old shoulder injury is flaring up, something that he did dirt trekking years ago, and he aggravated recently, and it's starting to bother him. Then they're saying it's tendonitis, but Fox News in Australia, which I'm sure is an always very reliable source, is reporting that Stoner might miss the first races of the season at Jerez, which doesn't sound like tendonitis to me. Sete Gibernau had the 11th fastest time with 203.51. Gibernau is yet another rider that had a frustrating first day there at Sepang. He had gearbox problems on his Ducati, which forced him to use his backup machine. 12th, Tony Elias. Then Kenny Roberts Jr. in 13th with a 203.58, right around the same times that he was doing in the second test. Makota Tomata was 14th fastest, just 0.08 of a second behind Kenny Roberts. 15th fastest on day one, Shinya Nakano, who didn't quite manage to break the 204 mark, probably because he was trying out some interesting setup ideas for later in the test and that sort of thing. He's working on a lot of different variables and experimenting with stuff. 16th, Chris Vermeulen with a 204.1, then a whopping 1.3 seconds behind Vermeulen, we had Alex Hoffman on the first of the Dantin Ducatis, closely followed by Cardoso and James Ellison with the final position of 19th on a 205.9. 4 full seconds behind Marco Melandri. Ouch. Hopefully Ellison starts picking up the pace soon because Checa's starting to make him look kind of bad. I'm a little curious here. I think he's having some troubles adapting to the motorcycle. It's supposed to be somewhat difficult to ride and all of that. But, you know, Checa has had experience with the Yamaha before, but it's still, you know, it's like, come on, man. James, get with the program. On the second day of the test, the fastest rider was, and a drum roll please, Shinya Nakano. Wow, way to go, Shinya. Apparently all that fiddling around on day one paid off because he turned in a time of 201.8 and got the top spot of the day. Now, rain did mess the afternoon up a little bit and kind of, you know, spoiled some people's testing schedules, and that might be why the overall times for day two are a tad slower than you might expect. But that is still a very good time, and no matter how you slice it, he got in the top spot. So good job, Shinya. Second fastest, only 0.07 off the pace, was Caparossi, followed another 0.02 back, 0.02 of a second, by Rossi, who shaved off 0.3 compared to his day one time, by the way. Then Hopkins and Pedrosa, within 1.90 and a 1.93, respectively. And so the top fastest riders, the top five fastest riders of the day, all had times in the 201s, and they were separated only by 0.13 of a second. So it's pretty close riding. Checa continues his run of good times, coming in sixth fastest with a 202.06, and then Edwards in seventh and Depunier in eighth, which Depunier definitely does seem to be having a pretty good test here. He did well on day one. He's doing well on day two. Ninth fastest on day two, Tomata. Then Elias, then Melandri in 11th. And Melandri managed to hurl his motorcycle into the gravel for the second day in a row, by the way. But he's, you know, did okay other than that. Gibernau, who had some bad shrimp or something and ended his day early because he was complaining of stomach pains, clocked the 12th quickest lap. And Nicky Hayden followed in 13th with a 202.93. I believe this was Hayden's first full day on the 2006 spec bike, although he was swapping back throughout the test between the 2005 and the 2006, which did give him some problems because of the changing weather. And he's been the development mule for the last few tests of Honda. So, you know, that might kind of explain his position so far down the leaderboard. Next, only 0.02 of a second behind Hayden, we have Kenny Roberts Jr., 14th fastest time of the day. So, you know, cool stuff. Team KR is definitely bringing it on. Looking forward to some further performance from them in Barcelona and, of course, when we start racing. But in any event, Kenny Roberts took 14th fastest. Then Vermeulen had the 15th fastest time. He shaved almost a second off of his previous day's best time. He had a 203.18. And then a full second behind Vermeulen, we have Hoffman on the first of those Dantin Ducks again. And also, Hoffman actually also took a second off of his previous day's time from day one. He managed to put in a 204.23. 17th and 18th spots were Cardoso and Ellison. Now, Ellison must be getting pretty discouraged about all this. Came in last again. Both of them had a 204.65. Day 3 was seriously hosed by rain. It was keeping everyone in the box until noon. Then more rain at 2 o'clock, pretty much ending the day, except for a short stint around 4 o'clock. Because of all this nasty weather, the times are a little bit kind of all over the place, but they can still be compared. So let's cover them really quickly. Day 3, fastest time, was Loris Caporossi with a time of 2 minutes, 1.92 seconds. Rossi, second, with a 2:02.06. Third was Nakano, another good day for him, doing real well. Fourth fastest, Colin Edwards, then Hopkins in fifth, and Depunier in sixth. They must be putting something in the water at the Kawasaki hospitality tent. Both those guys are really on fire there on day 3. Shinya's in third place and Depunier in sixth. Hopefully they keep it up and they can actually manage this kind of pace during a race. Sepang is traditionally a very good track for Bridgestone tires, and so I'm sure that is definitely helping. But, you know, the factory ducks aren't really having a real easy time of things, so I'm not too sure if that's the only explanation. Seventh, Seti Gibernau on one of the factory ducks, still suffering from his abdominal pain from that bad shrimp or chicken saute or whatever it was, with a 2:02.65. Then Cheka in eighth fastest spot on his Dunlops, working tirelessly. Pedrosa ninth, not really able to get a lot of good laps in because of the weather. And 10th position, Nikki Hayden, still locked in the doldrums with a 2:02.86. Speaking of Hayden, there was an interesting article posted on superbikeplanet.com that you might want to take a look at. This article was posted last week, and it speculated that we're going to be seeing Hayden at Yamaha in 2007. Assuming Rossi makes a switch to Formula One, of course. Now, most of the article was actually fairly silly, but it was kind of entertaining, and it set off firestorms on many of the internet forums that I've seen. You know how it is. When you read it on the internet, it has to be true, so there was a lot of discussion about the whole thing. It was kind of interesting. Okay, back to the times. Tomata had the 11th fastest time of the day. Melandri was in 13th, had a 2:03 flat. Then Elias 6/10 back from him in 13th. Hoffman, who was probably wishing he was still on that Kawasaki motorcycle, had a 2:04.18. Then Kenny Roberts came in 15th. Team Roberts is pretty happy with these test results overall. They got a lot of good data despite the rain. 16th spot was Cardoso, and bringing up his unfortunately all too common last place was James Ellison in 17th. Someone has to be last, and it's starting to look like it's going to be James's job. Vermeulen and Stoner both missed the last day, Stoner because of those shoulder problems that also caused him to miss day 2, and Vermeulen because of some kind of, quote, minor injury to his right shoulder, unquote, that Suzuki is not talking very much about. And won't kind of tell us why he has a minor injury on his shoulder. Well, like I said, that's it for the winter tests. There's the results for you. Now we will have the official preseason testing at Catalunya and Jerez. So next up is Barcelona, Spain, sunny Spain, March 3rd through 5th at the Catalunya track for the first IRTA official test. I had a chance to talk with motorcycle racer Kenny Noyes a little while ago. Kenny was hanging out with Liam Schubert when I called to talk to Liam. You might remember that from a couple episodes ago. And it was literally like Liam saying, hey, you want to talk to Kenny Noyes? And, you know, so I'm like, sure thing. So this was a very, very off-the-cuff interview. Portions of it might sound kind of that way. So apologies in advance. I did do quite a bit of editing to it, but it definitely keeps the flavor of the interview. It was interesting to talk to Kenny. He's a good guy. He's riding in the Spanish Production Motorcycle Championship this year in their Formula Extreme class, pretty much similar to AMA and World Superstock. So, let's get to Kenny. Hi, Kenny.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. Just hanging out here with Liam.
Welcome to MotoGPOD. Thanks for taking some time to talk with us here. So, recently you had an article in Road Racing World where you wrote about your chance to ride the Kawasaki ZXRR and the Ducati Desmo Sedici. How was that?
MotoGP was unbelievable. I mean, the difference between the bikes that I raced in the Spanish Championship, which are halfway between Superstock and Superbikes, they're like a hot rod Superstock, I guess you could call them. The difference between that and the MotoGP bikes is much greater than I thought it would be, you know. Not just because of the top horsepower, but because of how light they feel and how the electronics make them so much easier to ride also.
And now when you say Superstock, you're talking World Superstock, which is what pretty much basically the same as AMA Superstock, right?
Right. The Spanish Championship is almost like the AMA regs. They allow a little bit more modification to the engine.
So we're talking about liter bikes, correct?
Yeah, 1,000cc.
So how did that come about, doing that ride on the MotoGP bikes? Was that strictly for Road Racing World, or was it some opportunity that came up and then you sort of it got to be taken advantage of to have the Road Racing World article, or, you know, how
does
that work?
No, it was strictly for Road Racing World. They called me up. I think initially Chris Ulrich was going to do it, but I think he had a prior engagement in the States, and they asked me if I'd want to go. And I didn't even ask him if it paid any money or anything. I just said, yeah, sure. You know, it's a really good opportunity, and it opens your eyes a lot to see what a really, really good bike is like.
Wow, yeah. And then I guess your career aspirations are to one day be up there as well, or?
Yeah, one day to be up there. I mean, for me, the goal really is to get the Superbike either in the AMA or in the World Championship, and anything that comes after that would be great, you know, but MotoGP, there's not that many slots there, and it's even tough for guys like Max and stuff to stay there, so.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's a big aspiration. I mean, obviously, it'd be great, but I'd be real happy running Superbikes also.
Right. Yeah, anything along those lines would be an excellent career. Now, what classes are you racing in for the 2006 season?
I'm riding in the Spanish Championship another year, staying with Yamaha, and I'm running in the Formula Extreme, which is about like AMA Superstock, with a little bit more horsepower in the engines. And it's Spain's premier class because they don't run a Superbike Championship. So they only have Super Sport, and they have 125 Super Sport and Formula Extreme.
Cool. And actually, I've got a question for you based on a motorcyclist in Spain or a motorcycle racer in Spain and the details. And I actually put this out to my listeners that are in Spain and didn't get a whole lot of response. But do you see with Fernando Alonso winning the Formula One championship, do you see any sort of cooling down of the amazing popularity of motorcycle racing in Spain, sort of leaning towards Formula One at all?
No, I don't see anybody going to Formula One and leaving and quitting being a MotoGP fan. I see it better for motorsports in general, and anything that's better for motorsports in general is really better for both, because there's enough room. There's enough room to, you know, to go both directions. You know, I mean, it's not like people are gonna stop watching the GPs or gonna get any less excited about it or gonna quit filling the tracks because they're also gonna go to Formula One.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. It's just, you know, that we are seeing, you know, Telefonica Movistar has pulled out and decided to put all their money into Formula One, and that's probably a mistake. As motorcycle racing fans, we know it's a mistake. But, you know, you just,
right.
You're sort of
so concerned. I think that they will see that soon because Alonso signed a deal for the next season, for 2007, with Vodafone, which is European cell phone company. So Telefonica is going to invest everything there, and then they're going to be caught without a driver. So,
like you say, what's good for motorsports in general is just good. So, you know, it's nice to see the first Spanish Formula One champion and all that kind of business. It's just a little unfortunate that Telefonica chose to react that way. Okay, back to the Spanish sport championship that you're riding in. How many races are you know, what's your season like there?
It's an 8-race series for next season. And, oh, I did forget to mention I'm also running the Endurance Spanish Championship, which is 4 rounds. And the round of the World Championship, the World Endurance Championship in Albacete. So it ends up with, when you add the Endurance in there, you get about 13 races.
Okay, cool. And what tracks are you going to be at there in Spain?
We'll be in Valencia, Catalunya, Jerez, Albacete, Almería, and Cartagena. Pretty much all the tracks that are homologated to race on.
Okay, covers all the whole wide range of what you've got available in Spain, huh? Okay.
Yeah, which is quite a few tracks. There's a couple more that they don't run on because they don't have enough facilities. But to give you an idea, you know this, but there's for anyone out there that doesn't, Spain's about the size of Texas, a little bit smaller. and you got about 10. I mean, the amount of tracks that you have are amazing, you know. Really the best thing about racing over here is how many different quality tracks there are for bikes.
Right, all within a what an American would consider driving distance with no problem.
Yeah, and here they talk about far, and far is 8 hours in the car.
Out of all those, which is your personal favorite?
Jerez and Catalunya are my favorites. I especially like Jerez because of the fast corners and the way it flows, the way the track flows together.
Yeah, it definitely seems to be a real motorcycle track. Now, what about Valencia? You know, we hear that it's really too tight and twisty for the bigger bikes, and it makes it difficult. Is this something that you're finding as well?
Yeah, it doesn't really produce real spectacular racing. There are not that many chances to pass, especially in the infield area. And, it doesn't really, like I think Colin Edwards said, it doesn't have character, you know. It's kind of feels like a big go-kart track in a way. But there's a lot to be learned there also, you know. It's got really tricky surface and a couple of real technical corners. So as far as learning and as far as riding fast, it's as difficult as any track. But as far as the actual spectator and just the passing and stuff, it's not one of the best tracks.
So, yeah, I can understand. And I guess from a spectator's point of view, you can pretty much see, you know, it's like a bowl, so you can see the entire thing. But, yeah, from a riding and the quality of racing point of view, it's...
Yeah, and a TV spectator is not so great. Being at the track's pretty cool, and it does have a stadium atmosphere to it, which is great at the GP races. And when it's full, it's pretty spectacular. You know, the feeling, it's like it feels like a stadium as opposed to a track where you can't see the whole course.
Right. Huh. Now, that's actually one of my goals, is to get to a GP in Spain. And I've always had my eye on either Catalunya or Jerez. And just for that whole atmosphere, you know, where everybody's just so crazy about it.
Yeah, if you can make Jerez, it's something else. It's almost like the actual town gets completely taken over. I've been there in the streets and before the race, and you actually feel like it's dangerous. You know, there's guys on motocross bikes and quads and everything out loose in the streets, and it's like the police disappear, you know. it's pretty amazing, especially from an American point of view, to come here for the first time and see it all.
I'll bet. It just, it takes over completely. How long have you been racing over there?
Here, 2000. I came over here in 2001, but I only had only raced two races that year. So my real first season was 2002.
Outstanding. So you've had quite a bit of experience going on over there, and yeah, that's good. And it's just going to go on up from there, I'm sure, for you.
Yeah, starting to. It's a real tough championship to crack because you got a lot of local guys that have been to GPs and have been out of here that have come back to the national championship. And they're real fast, and you got a lot of guys coming up also. So it's a difficult championship to go well in, but it's also one that you learn a lot in. So hopefully you can make the next step from here and go to Superbikes.
I'm sure it'll that those things will start coming into play for you pretty soon. It just sounds like you've got your career on track.
Actually, there is a possibility. It's not official at all, but there is a possibility that we might make a couple AMA races this year. So we'll see. I'll definitely keep Liam posted on that, because we should know pretty quick if we're going there or not. And it would be fun to go back to the States and see how everything is over there. Now, you know, because I've never road raced in the States. I only dirt tracked over there. So we're pretty curious to go over there and see what it's all like in the AMA.
Yeah, that would be outstanding, too, for us to, you know, to have that opportunity to see you come over and act as a wild card in an AMA race. So, yeah. Well, all right. I, you know, really appreciate your time here, Kenny. This was a very last minute. I didn't even know, in fact, until about 5 minutes ago that I was going to be talking to you. So I apologize for the not having any questions prepared. And
I didn't either. Liam just told me he was calling you guys, and I'm always anything. I'm glad to be going out in some magazines in the States and stuff. And because at first when I came over here, it was almost like disappeared as far as from the American point of view, you know.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I mean, it's hard enough to be able to follow. World Superbike and hell, even AMA, really. So, like I said, thanks a whole bunch for taking the time here on the phone, Kenny. Wish you the best of luck in the series. Liam said you were a little bit pressed for time, so I don't want to, keep you on the phone forever. But I really do appreciate it.
No problem. And I just want to say hi to all American fans back there in the States or from all over. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. It was more about the right length today. They've been a little long the past few shows. It's kind of all these phone calls, but they're really interesting, and I hate to cut them up. So, you know, it's not like a regular radio show where it has to fit the time slot and stuff. You know, it's just the wonder of podcasting. So we make the show run a little long. You can always listen to it in a couple chunks. So don't forget to check out the Motorcycle Podcast Group at motorcyclepodcastgroup.com, all one big long word. We've got one show up there right now, and another one will be there before too long. And don't forget the cool contest that MotoCast is doing. And while you're at it, check out the other shows in the Motorcycle Podcast Group, which are the Road Racer Podcast with John Bunce and V-Twin Journal with Biker Greg. All these shows are in iTunes and all better podcast directories everywhere. Plus, of course, there's links on the MotoGPOD website as well. I guess that's about it today. This is Bob Hayes saying thank you very much for listening. And if you want to send me an email, the address is always MotoGPOD@MotoGPOD.com. So until Friday, next Friday that is, I will talk to you later. Where's this damn disclaimer? Here it is. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD is not affiliated with any of them.